Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I am so excited to have Tim Ezell on the show today. Tim is the host, pastor, and co-creator of The Thread and is a feature reporter on Fox 2 News. Tim, I am so excited to have you here with me today.
I'm excited to be here.
Oh, my goodness.
Always good getting together with you.
We've been friends now for several years. I always have so much fun when I'm with you and just learn things. And so I know that our listeners know who you are, but they may not know parts of your story that I kind of want to talk about today.
Absolutely.
So let's dive on in. So tell us a little bit, because you grew up in Fort Worth, Texas.
I did. I grew up in Fort Worth, Texas. My dad's from Greenville, Mississippi. My mom from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. They met at LSU, and my father moved to Fort Worth to attend seminary there, Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary, graduated from there and was a professor there for years. That was where I grew up, born and raised in Fort Worth, Texas.
So you went to, the stockyards?
Oh, yeah,
Fort Worth stockyards.
Oh, yeah, we got stock show holiday. you get a day off from school for the stock show.
That's amazing.
Oh, yeah. And they give you free tickets at school. It was beautiful.
So talk to us a little bit about how you grew up. And I know that you had what I call a life interruption.
Absolutely.
About in the eighth grade. And I'd like for you to talk a little bit about that. But
yeah, so I grew up a PK, pastor's kid, was raised in a very solid family atmosphere. We went to church every Sunday. We read the Bible as a family. And then in seventh grade, my parents separated and eventually divorced when I was in eighth grade. And my father was kind of the spiritual anchor in the house. And when he left, that was a big void in my life. And I was at an age where, pretty rough age for that
to happen.
Yeah, to lose the man of the house and not have my father present. You know, I'd grown up with a deep faith, but at that point, I was like, you know what, I'm going to try this on my own terms.
You were kind of shaking a little bit.
Yeah, I was. I'm like, if God's going to allow this to happen, then what next? Let me try this isn't working. Let me try my own terms.
And
I started drinking at that point. The first time I drank, I blacked out, and that became a pattern of mine. It was a regular thing for me to black out. And that continued through high school and on off to college. And around my senior year of college, I finally just hit a bottom. I hit a place where I couldn't imagine living with or without alcohol. And I woke up once again in a strange place with strange people. I didn't know how I got there. My car was out front, which was a regular thing. The two places I should have been either dead or in prison by the choices I made those years.
By the grace of God.
By the grace of God, I wasn't. I got up from that morning, and I just was at a bottom-out place. And then my uncle Andy, who had always been a real close relationship of mine, I used to visit him in Baton Rouge when I was in middle school for spring break. I'd go and stay with him. And he had moved to L.A. and had just moved back to Baton Rouge. He was going through a divorce himself. And he moved back to Baton Rouge right when I hit my bottom. And he had 2 years sobriety. And I called him and I said, I don't know what to do. And he took me to a meeting that morning. Mm-hmm. And that was November 3rd, 1991. And I've been sober ever since. But I walked into that meeting just a broken
person.
Yeah, I just was done. I didn't have anything left, and there wasn't anything great that I did to get myself there. I was just broken and had nowhere else to turn, and God put my uncle right back in my life right when I needed.
So when you say you went to a meeting, I'm assuming that was AA.
Yep.
Alcoholics yep. Anonymous. And do you really believe that they gave you the tools to help turn this around? I've heard that a lot. But
absolutely. I mean, I just felt like admitting I was powerless over alcohol was a huge, you know, just in my early 20s. A lot of people would be like, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. You're too young for that. And my friends, you know, I found out who my friends were and who my drinking buddies were. I'll never forget my first weekend sober. I went to an LSU football game, and I was a trainer for the basketball team, so I had an athletic pass. I went through the pass gate, and then I could sit in the student section for the games. Well, I knew if I went back where I normally sat, it was not going to be a good place for me. Drinking was what the football games revolved around mm-hmm, when I was mm-hmm. during those days.
Sure.
And I walked into the stadium, and I just froze because I didn't know what to do. If I go where I usually go, it's not going to be good, and I don't have a seat to sit anywhere
right.
else. And right at that time, one of the assistant basketball coaches walked in, and he's like, Tim, what are you doing? And I just said, I don't know. And he said, do you not have a place to sit for the game? I said, I don't. And he said, come sit with me.
Aww.
And another just huge gift. And I sat there, and for the first time in years, I was able to enjoy the game for the game and the event for the event rather than for the party that was around
it's like,
it.
What have I been missing?
Exactly.
I've been
it's
missing
like,
the game.
Kind of a piece of your childhood back,
sure.
really. So, again, another God gift of him walking in when he did, because I don't know what I would have done. I guess I would have just walked out or gone home. I don't know. But, yeah, so that was at that age, the fog was beginning to lift, and I really felt God's call on my life to come back to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, this is who you really are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like—
That's not who you were.
Right, that's not who you were, you know. It's like in the parable of the prodigal son, you know, it's like when he came to himself, it says in scripture. And that's a great compliment we're given because who we really are is with the Father. And so that's kind of what I felt on my life.
Mm-hmm.
And the fog was beginning to lift. I didn't know ministry was in my future at all at that
right.
point. And didn't
you
think it
didn't
was.
Know, yeah. You,
yeah, that's
you
what my dad does.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And I still thought that even when after that moment. But God began to work in my life in some amazing ways. And,
right. When did you decide that you wanted to be in television?
So I'm in college. Well, first semester in college when I took zoology kind of took me out of the pre-med stage. I'm like, this isn't for me. I went into communications and broadcasting. I worked with the basketball team. I love sports, and I thought sports broadcasting, that's what I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be a sports broadcaster. I'm going to work on ESPN. That's going to be the goal. And so that's where I was aiming for. And when I got out of college, I didn't have a job. I didn't have a chance to intern in college because my job was working with the basketball team. It took all my time. So my first job out of college was I was just working part-time at a station in New Orleans as a freelancer with their high school football show. So I'd go out with the photographer, I'd log the plays and pick them, and then I'd choose which ones would go on the air, and that was it. And they slowly gave me more and more responsibility there, and I finally got a tape together. So after 3.5 years, I started sending tapes to whoever take one. And I got my first full-time job in Panama City, Florida, as a weekend sports anchor at a station there. And I'm like,
I've arrived.
Yeah, this is it. And,
this
you know,
is it.
Here I am. You know, and I was making pennies, but I was making and the people in Panama City, which is a small market, they're like, why are you leaving New Orleans to come here? I'm like, I don't have a job in New Orleans. I'm just a freelancer, man.
Uh-huh.
I'm just trying to get my foot in the door. But my first year out of college, I made $9,000 total for the year. And then now I was making more than $10,000 now. This
right.
is huge.
This is huge.
So I did that for a year. At my year review, I did a bunch of goofy stuff on sports. I know you find that hard to believe.
Like, you know, because you're not goofy.
Right,
at all.
Not at all. Like, LSU was playing Miami in the College World Series, and LSU won at the bottom of the ninth. So I had that highlight pop up, like, throughout my newscast. Like, oh, I'm running PGA highlights, and then that home run would pop up. I'm like, we must have a tape problem back there. And it popped up, like, 7 times. I got called in the office for that.
But
the news director, Larche Hardy, and I give him all the credit in the world, he's the one that came to me and said, what would you think about coming to the morning show to break up the news and weather? We've never had this position before. You'd have to make it up as you go along. I'm like, great.
Yeah.
He said, but let's try it. And his consultants, the station had consultants who tell him what's good, what's
sure.
not. They told him, bad idea, bad idea. And he's like, no, I think this will work. And he gave me the opportunity to do it, and that's how I got into doing what I'm doing now.
So you were kind of the comic relief
yes.
between the news and the sports
right.
in the
and
morning.
Right, and there really weren't positions like that. I mean, you see feature reporters now, it's more common, but back then, it was new, and he
right.
took a chance on it.
Right.
And we went from number 2 to number 1 in the ratings on the morning show, and I fell in love with it. I'm like, this is what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I started putting a tape together, and I said, I'm not putting any news, I'm not putting any weather, I'm not putting any sports. I know this is what I want to do, and I'm not going to hear about jobs like this, so I'm going to send it to agents who will. So I got a list of all the agents that I could, and I sent every one of them a tape. And I got a stack of rejection letters mile high. Not what we do, great
right.
energy, but not exactly what
not
we're
looking
for.
Not a good fit.
Yeah, not a fit. And I had tons of those. And then I finally got one agent that said, you know, I want to take a chance on this. I'm like, that's all I'm asking for. And they sent a tape to St. Louis, to Fox 2.
Okay, okay.
And she called me and she said, I sent a tape to St. Louis. I'm like, yeah, what did they think? Well, they thought it was different. I'm like, okay. And they said, well, they want to see more. So I put another tape together. And I put even more wacky stuff on there. I'm like, because if I get the job, I want them to know this is what I want to do.
Yeah.
I don't want to put any hidden agenda. Sent it to them. They go, well, this time they showed it to the general manager. What did he think? And they thought it was different. I go, is that good? They go, well, they want you to come in for an interview. I came in. I interviewed with John Pertzborn, who was just moving from Channel 5 to Channel 2 at the time, and the news director. And I got married June 20th of 98, and I started in St. Louis July 20th of 98.
Oh, my goodness.
So Kim and I started our new life together right here in St. Louis.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, there's just so much that's packed in there. I mean, you know, you had to have some courage because it was different, Tim. I mean, it had to take courage to kind of put yourself out there. The other thing, I mean, you said you got a stack of rejection letters, but you didn't quit. You know, you just kept going. And there's some really good lessons in there, I think.
My friends were all moving on in careers long before I was, because it took me 3.5 years out of college just to get my first job.
Right.
But it was like, you know what? I want to do what I want to do.
Right.
You know, I wanted
knowing
to be,
what
I
you
be
wanted
in the right
to do.
Spot. It was just such a gift. I mean, worst case scenario, I'm still in Panama City doing it.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
right.
For pennies. You know, but I'm doing something that...
That you love and you're passionate
exactly.
And you're gifted at. I mean, you figured out that you were gifted at that,
And that was my thing, you know. And I was the comic relief at home. You know, I kind of was groomed for that job, because when things got tense in the household, when things between my father and my mother and my sister, I would just say, hey, here comes the comic relief, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of groomed for that.
Right.
You know.
It's
just
so
kinda,
interesting.
Yeah. It was a huge opportunity I was given here in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
Who knew how it was going to go here? It could have been really rejected here. People could have seen it and said,
well, we're kind of
no.
The show me state.
Yes, so exactly.
That's kind of
I
funny to
all.
Me. That's a little oxymoron because, you know, certainly, you know, it's like, well, this has never been done this way before.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting. What kind of challenges have you faced in your career? I'm sure that there's been some challenges along the way.
Well, you know, you're kind of constantly inventing, you know, because it's never been done before. You're trying new things. It's trial and error, and you see what works. You're not going to win over everybody. I mean, when I first started at the station, there was this woman who would call every, all right, I'm done watching Timmy Zell. I'm done with him. And then she'd call the next day. I'm like, you could just stop watching.
Right.
You know, just change
you don't
the
have
channel.
To call every day.
But
right.
I think one of the lessons I learned through that and through the negative responses you get is that, you know, you got to be careful who you give authority to speak into your life.
Mm-hmm.
Like if they
mm-hmm.
haven't earned that authority, then just brush your shoulders off.
Right.
You know, who am I given authority to define who I am?
I think that is really a valuable lesson because, and I was just talking to somebody this week about that. And I said, here's the thing. Not everybody's going to like you. They're
no.
not. And they're going to say mean things. But, you know, you have to consider the source and then you have to move on. So especially for somebody like you that is so out there in the public, I'm sure that you've had people, you know, say, you know, I don't like how you do this or do that. But you.
I still have a guy that emails in or on a regular basis how. But he keeps watching. It's like,
there's something there.
Yeah. It's like, and in this world of social media now, where we let people who we don't even know define us, and we let them get under our skin because they've said something. It's like, are you giving that person authority to speak into your life? Because if you don't give them the authority, then they don't. It has no effect. Don't give them rent-free space in your head.
Sure. I like that. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back with Timmy Zell. As a business leader, you know that keeping a solid first impression with your potential clients, customers, and talent is vital to reaching your organization's goals. If you haven't optimized your website, or if you don't even have a website, you're missing an opportunity to shape your first impression so that it shows your brand in the best possible light. If you're thinking about revolutionizing your website, let's talk. Our team at Technology Partners is ready to help you reshape your online presence. Go to tpi.co/websites and start your journey today. Tim, I want to talk a little bit about this because I know you've got a huge heart. You've got a heart the size of Texas, but you have a heart for young people.
Yes.
And I know that you have a concern that there is a real tech addiction with our kids. And can you talk a little bit about that and what you see as the challenge? How can parents navigate that world?
One of the things I worry about is just our interpersonal communication skills. You know, if we're doing it all on a screen and never face-to-face, and people will say things behind a screen that they'd never say face-to-face, number one. We allow these people that we may not even know very well define us or speak into us or validate us or invalidate us, which is the bigger problem, in so many ways. And we put so much emphasis on that, that I worry about our young people really having positive influences in their life, people that are steady. I mean, okay, your social media says you have 5,000 friends, but how many would be there for you in a pinch? What does a real friendship look like? So yeah, I worry that they can get into that world, into that social media world, and not enjoy the riches of relationship, true relationship, because it's so superficial on social media. And that's not to bash social media. I mean, there's some great things about it. Like, it's great that people in another state can keep up with their family members see family pictures and that sort of thing. But when it becomes a substitute and it becomes the main source of interpersonal communication and relationship, I just think it's dangerous. Mm-hmm. And I think it can be real harming. And I don't think we even know the full extent of it. And we won't for a while,
yeah. Will we? But we'll look back and go, wow, we see how that was the pivot.
Yeah. And I think young people want something that's solid and grounded. I think they're kind of longing for that because everything's so temporary. Everything's so, and the ability to find out information immediately, it leads to a lack of patience too, when that's something that's really necessary, especially when things go bad, because we see young people making rash decisions without waiting out the long game, because this is as good as it gets. It's bad now. It's never going to get any better.
It's never going to get any better, right?
Yeah.
Well, you have three kids of your own.
Oh, yeah.
And Kim had three children of your own.
Absolutely. So teenagers, all of them.
Yeah, I know. And so how have you guys, what are some practical things that parents can do to limit screen time or whatever the case may be?
Well, there's times when we just take them up. We just kind of say, and that means us too, though. Let's all put down our phones and let's relate. Let's just be family. Mm-hmm. You know, we went on a float trip in Steelville, Missouri, and there was no cell service. Mm-hmm. What a beautiful thing.
What a gift.
You know, what a gift. Yeah. Yes. And we're sitting around a campfire. We're talking. We're playing games, that kind of thing. We do a lot of board games, card games, that kind of thing in our house just to try to get off the tech and get away from that. But, do we do it right all the time? Heck no. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're still struggling. We're still figuring out how to do it right. But I think limiting that time and drawing our kids out when they isolate in their room on that thing, let's come on out. Let's get around the family and let's get some time together.
Well, I like what you said. You play board games. You play card games. You give them other options.
Yes.
And if you are doing that as a family intentionally, then maybe they don't feel like they need that as much.
And they enjoy it once they do it.
Right. You know, they love it.
If you can get them to separate from that device and they realize, oh, wait, there is some other things going on. I'm the first one to go to bed at night because I get up so early. So a lot of times, by the time I'm going to bed, everybody's on there and we're just talking and visiting. And I love that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to get up at what, 3 a.m.?
3 a.m. daily.
Oh, boy. So I want to talk about this a little bit. In 2013, you were approached by Virginia Kerr about an idea.
So Virginia was a feature reporter on Channel 4. I was on Channel 2. That's about all we knew of each other. Right. We'd see each other at the same stories occasionally. And she came to me probably early 2013 and said, will you meet with me? I got to talk to you. And I'm like, okay. So I met her and she's like, I got this great idea. I want to do a show. It's going to be called The Thread and it's going to be all about people who are serving others in our community. And what do you think? I think you're supposed to be a part of it. And I'm like, well,
I got this job.
I got a job right now. I'm kind of full time. I got kids at home. And she's like, well, just think about it. And will you consult me on it? I'm like, yeah, I'll do whatever I can do. Then I leave the station. I planted a church. Well, I planted a church in 2013 before I left the station. And she approached me then. And I'm like, well, I got two jobs right now. I'm doing the church and this. And then in 2014, I left the station and went full time with the church. And she's like, all right, you're freed up from that job. I'm like, yeah, but I'm still in seminary. And I'm doing this. And she's like, ah. And she kept at it. And finally, in 2016, she goes, all right, I really need you. I really think God's telling me that you're supposed to be a part of this show. There's a pastor supposed to be involved. And I believe you're it. Will you do it? And I said, yeah. I said, yes. Because I felt like God's call on it. I felt like being drawn to that. And I had been in the church for a few years, and it was apparent that that wasn't the place I was supposed to be. And I feel like God kind of said, all right, I know you thought your ministry was going to be four walls and a steeple, but I got other plans for you. And I'm going to get you back on that platform that I gave you for 16 years in St. Louis, and now you're going to speak for me instead. So I was like, okay. And so that's when I stepped into The Thread in September of 2016. We launched and we had no clue what we were doing. we knew everything about being on a show, nothing about owning one, running one, the business side of it. Ah, steep learning curve.
Mm-hmm.
But we muddled our way through it. We had a lot of lean times. That April of the first season, we were about done. We had nowhere else to go. It was Easter, and we're like, you know what, let's just give the gospel at the end of the show. That's what this is all about. It's really why we're here. And we did it, and here comes God stepping in, and we get a little bump up, and we just started doing that. We give the gospel at the end of every show. That's who we are. It's what our show's about, and how John 13:34, as I've loved you, love one another. As we've been loved through Christ, we go out and love our community in the same way. That's been the mission of the thread, and the mission of the thread is to thread together our community. I mean, we're so divided that we need to address the problem that we're actually stronger together than we ever are apart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the most disturbing things I learned when I was in seminary is that there's 20,000 denominations of the Christian faith worldwide. And that's dividing over everything from the color carpet in the sanctuary to the type of music or doctrinal issues, you name it. But it's division.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of coming together on what we agree on, we're dividing over our minor differences. And if we could come together and link arms and pull together, man, what a difference we can make.
Oh, wow. And there are those unifying threads for St. Louis. St. Louisans love St. Louis.
Absolutely.
They want to see us thriving, mm-hmm. right? We all care about our children.
Yep.
We all care about those that are coming after us. I mean,
absolutely.
There's a lot that we are unified on. Mm-hmm. And so I really love that about the thread. But, you know, the thing is, people may know the thread, the actual program that's on Saturdays and Sundays. But, Tim, I know that your vision for the thread is so much bigger than just a television show,
absolutely.
Right? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Virginia took a lesser role in the show in season two, and then I ran with it all of season three. And we're doing 26 episodes a year, new episodes, which is basically six straight months of shows. And that's a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
And we got very few people working on it. We got a great team, but it's a lot
of
work.
It's a small team.
Yes, but it's a small team.
It's
exactly.
A very small team.
And I went to the board as we ended near the end of this season, and I said, you know what? I can't do another season like this. You know, I had gone back to the station, which was great. I went back to Fox 2 in October, which allowed me to kind of do my tent making. That was my job, and it took some pressure off the thread. And then I was able to do, and they've been very supportive of me continuing mm-hmm. the thread as well. But mm-hmm. I said, I just can't. Physically, you know, I was sick like three times in between Christmas and New Year's. My body was just not, trying to do too much.
You can't do it at all.
And what I told the board was, early in season three, I got a call from a hospice organization, and they said, look, we give in-home hospice care for individuals who need it. We also offer spiritual guidance if they want it. And we just got a new client, and he said, the only person he wants to talk to about those things is you. Will you come see him? And I said, absolutely. And I got to walk with him through his last days and walk his wife through his last days and his funeral, and I officiated his funeral and made everlasting friends through that. And I told the board, if I got that phone call today, I don't know that I'd be able to do it because I don't have time. I said, and that can't happen. I was brought on this show to pastor and to be that part of the show, and
right.
if I don't have time for that because I'm dotting I's and crossing the T's, and something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we've done this season is we're trying to grow the overall ministry of the thread. Not just the show is part of it, but also our presence on social media, trying to reach people who are behind those screens and try to introduce them to what community looks like, and then our public outreach, where we're getting into the community. So we want to be able to eventually have these once-a-month events where we're able to be in a specific community and thread together that community. So we bring churches, organizations, nonprofits together, and we say, hey, look, are you concerned about homelessness? Well, don't reinvent the wheel. Rubber's on the road with Catherine. Join what she's doing
sure.
and make it stronger. Instead of us being territorial, let's figure out how we can be, you know,
unified.
Communal. Yeah.
Yes.
So that's a big part of it. So we've cut our production costs in half because we're cutting our season from 26 to 13. But we're going to do concentrated runs where they're, instead of previously we've gone for two new episodes and then we have to catch our breath and do a rerun, and then we do one and we have to do two reruns to catch our breath. We're doing six straight episodes in a row from mid-October through Thanksgiving, plus a Christmas episode. So seven episodes by the end of the year, and then another run from March through Easter. And that allows us in those other times to really grow our presence
sure.
in the communities,
mm-hmm.
on social media.
And do some of these other things, right?
Yeah. I'm really excited about it because I think it's really going to allow us to really grow. And we're getting someone to come on board and take over the admin that I was doing, which I'm horrible at. I mean, she can do in 5 minutes what takes me 5 hours.
Right, right.
And then we're also trying to bring on a producer-editor so that I'm out of the edit bay. And
good.
I'm handing off the show, and then I'm done, and then I'm building relationships. I'm getting out in the communities. I'm able to do the things that I need to be doing on
mm-hmm.
the show to really have the mission grow and not just the TV show.
Right, and the impact that the show can have.
Yes.
What do you think is the unique leadership lesson that you have learned in front of the camera?
You know, one of the biggest I learned early on, being in a small market, being in Panama City, Florida, where you have to do everything. So I had to shoot my own stuff, write my own stuff, you know, edit it. You get an appreciation for everybody else's job. And you know that it's not just because they see me on camera. There's a team below
there's a
that.
Whole team.
Absolutely.
And sometimes you are the team.
Absolutely. but there's a team that's got to get that done. And an appreciation for everybody else's role.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other leadership is don't take it for granted. I mean, what an amazing platform we're given. Don't take it for granted. Don't abuse it. The fact that people welcome you into their home each and every morning was a huge thing for me. And then when I get a phone call and I get someone who would email me or call me and say, I've been on chemotherapy for the last 6 months and you're the one smile I get a day. Mm-hmm. Mind blown, right? I mean, that's what a privilege. That's why you do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's your motivation for those folks who are behind, who are in front of that screen, and you're the one opportunity you got to put a smile on their face before they go through whatever they're going through.
Right.
I think that's a huge privilege. So taking the position seriously and seeing
not
it as
taking yourself too seriously, but taking the position and the privilege that you've been given very seriously.
Yeah. I don't take myself seriously. by the grace of God, I am who I am. So, it's not about
me. We all love you, Tim. Well, let's move into something extra.
Okay.
So I know you have a story about where you say something extra was missing in you, and I'd like for you to tell that.
Yeah. So, again, we hit the skids on the thread, and Virginia had taken a backseat role to deal with some things that she needed to deal with, and I just took on the motto, you know, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. And I buckled down. And I said, I'm going to do this in my own strength. And I started taking things, and I can do this. And I can do it.
Yeah. I can do it. I just got to work harder.
I about white-knuckled the show into the ground because I was doing it in my own strength. And we had always said, Virginia and I always said, this is God's show. It's not ours. We just get to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
He's taking us on this ride. And so when things are about to blow up because I've white-knuckled into the ground, God says, whose show is this? I said, well, it's yours, God. It's always been yours. And he goes, so you're going to back up from it a little bit so I can get in there and do some work? And I'm like, okay, yeah.
Point taken.
You know, well said. And so I had to back up and know that my strength isn't sufficient. I don't have the strength to do it.
But Tim, you bring up a great point because especially type A people, you know, they are get it done kind of people.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm going to work harder. I'm going to work more hours, you know? So practically though, how do you take your hands off? Because it's like, if you're not doing it in your mind, you're thinking it's not getting done.
And that's part of the leadership thing is you got to trust other people.
Mm.
You got to trust other people that they're in the position they are because they're doing it, and you've got to take your hands off of it and let them do. The production company we work with is Spot Media Production Group, and they're amazing. And Rick Hensel and his brother Len run it. And Rick was the first photographer I worked with at Fox 2 when I first got hired there. And Rick will tell you, man, when I was in the edit bay, I'd be like, can you trim that a little bit? Okay, maybe two more frames there, just a little bit there. And he's like, get out. And yeah.
Get out and let me do my job.
Cast the vision, let people follow it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And that's what I had to learn.
That's a great leadership tenet.
Here's the vision, follow it. I can't sit there and micromanage it. Even though the control freak in me says do that, I've got to say, you know, it's the control freak in me that gets me in my worst positions.
Right.
I got to surrender and let go and know that there's more freedom and more strength and surrender than there ever is in white-knuckling it.
Mm-hmm. That's such a great lesson. Great advice. Well, tell me this. What do you think is the something extra that every leader needs?
I think servant leadership is the deal. I think you got to serve those you're leading. You got to be willing to be in the trenches with them. You got to be willing to lead by example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're not willing to do it, why should they be willing to do it? I think just knowing that as a leader, your first goal is to serve. Cast vision and serve. This is where we're headed. This is where we're aiming. And then link arms with them. Don't be at a distance from them where I'm here and they're here.
You're right there with them. You're walking beside them. Let's do it together.
Exactly. And knowing your weaknesses.
That's so important.
I know we needed this admin person because I'm a horrible multitasker. You know, number one, and when I'm in production, I just feel like I got to get this done. I can't step out and do this. And structure for me is another one. A lot of people look at what I do on TV and they say, man, he's so unstructured. Yes. Within structure.
Mm-hmm.
If you tell me, Tim, go be creative in this space, I can do that all day long. But if you say, Tim, go create the space and then be creative in it, I don't do well with that.
Right.
Give me some parameters and I'm good. Fence me in a little bit.
That's great advice too. Very good. Well, I want to give you the opportunity to talk about something that's coming up. And I want you to be able to tell our listeners how they can get involved. So go for it.
Absolutely. So The Thread is about to kick off season four. We've started it, kicked off a campaign. We got this amazing gift of $40,000 that they wanted to pair with that a match challenge. So we're trying to match that $40,000. And look, it's not the big donations for The Thread. It's the individuals that, you know, a groundswell. One of the things, the Bible verse that thrives and pushes this ministry is John 13:34, a new commandment I give to you, love one another. As I have loved you, love one another. And so we're asking people, hey, how about if you made a gift of $13.34 a month? And you get that on your bank statement, number one, it reminds you, oh, love others as I've been loved. But then it also reminds you, I supported The Thread, and this is what my mission is. Mm-hmm. Love the next person who crosses your path.
$13.34.
And so we're working our way towards that. We're hoping to get that. And everything that we're trying to do is just so we can grow that mission, so we can thread up our community. Mm-hmm. And that new season kicks off October 19th, and we're excited about it. It's going to be an amazing show, focusing on an event that just took place here recently. And it displays unity, organizations coming together to make an event happen.
Right.
And I think it's going to be huge.
So, Tim, what I want our listeners to understand is you're on Fox 2, but what Fox 2 has given you is the platform. The Thread has to raise its own funding, right, to continue.
We're a 501c3 nonprofit, and we are blessed with the platform we've been given. Fox 2 has been so supportive of the show, but we've got to support it. We've got to grow support for it. That's what we're seeking to do with this match. And I really believe God's got big things in store.
I agree.
He wants to do in and through it.
Because I know your vision is big. So, and you're already making such an impact. So,
oh, thank you.
If we can just continue that. So,
that's
listeners,
hope.
Get involved.
Thank you.
All right. So, Tim, this has been so much fun.
Always a good time.
It's been a fun time.
Always fun.
So,
thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you for being here.
You got it.
Our show today is executive produced by Brian Muncy. Our technical producer is Daniel Williams. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach out to Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.